Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network, and hopefully add a little historical context to them. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is Lucky Episode number 13, and in this edition we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode, which was taped on Wednesday, March 31st, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets on Saturday, April 3rd, 1982. If you like the show and want more things related to it, you can check out our social media. We have all of it, but we update Twitter and Facebook the most. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. Two of our more popular features are On This Day in JCP TV History and hashtag Everyday Arn, where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that was Jim Crockett Promotions Television, as well as the greatness that is the enforcer, AA Arn Anderson. If you want to follow along with us as we review episodes of the show, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network over at WWENetwork.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. If you want to find out more about what was going on in wrestling at the time, if you go over to MidSouthPod.com, the Mid-South Wrestling Review Show with Brian Last and Mike Mills cover this weekend, April 3rd, 1982, on episode number 16 of their show. And now, without any other further ado, I bring in my co-host Roman Gomez. Roman, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing good, and before we get started, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody out there for supporting us and the kind words and the instant messages and everything. I can tell you Mike and I greatly appreciate it, and I know there's a billion and one wrestling podcast out there, but we really appreciate you guys taking time to listen to our podcast and give us some feedback. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, and if you're listening to this in real time, and we try to keep all of our stuff evergreen, but if you are listening to this in real time, it is the end of March 2020. We've got coronavirus everywhere, and that's terrible. But one thing that's a silver lining in that cloud is the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast special look at the Clash of the Champions, 2.5-hour special edition that we did, taking a look at the very first Clash of the Champions show, celebrating the 32nd anniversary, March 27th, 1988, a ton of audio, both interviews, clips from matches, all of the lead up leading into the show. We give you the backstory. We lay everything out for you on how everything came to be as far as the show went and the matches that were on it and the effects that came from it. Obviously, the biggest thing on the show, Sting, Ric Flair, the making of Sting as a superstar in WCW by Ric Flair on that show, but also a crazy U.S. tag team title match between the Midnight Express and the Fantastics. Tag team title match with the Twin Towers of Barry Windham and Lex Luger battling Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. The show that went head up with WrestleMania 4, and we do our deep dive into it. I had a blast doing that show, Roman. I look forward to doing a lot more shows like that. That one, the Starrcade 84 show we've done. Those shows get a great response, and they're really fun to do for me because not only do we get to dig into that day, you get to revisit all of the TV and all the great stuff that built towards it that made it those nights so special.
Doing those shows are definitely a blast, and it's amazing. You look through them through a different telescope or a different set of eyes compared to when they actually happened. You know, a lot of times, things that appear great at that time, you look back 30 years later and you're like, yeah. And then other times you're like, wow, they really held up through the test of time. And I think when you guys listen to the Clash of Champions 1 podcast, I think you guys will agree that the Clash of Champions 1 definitely held up through the years.
Don't want to stray too far away from our topic today, which is, of course, the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode, which aired on Saturday, April 3rd, 1982. In local markets, was taped on Wednesday, March 31st, 1982. And we have some shows that sometimes are carried by interviews, sometimes they're carried by long, great matches between two high-quality performers and big-name performers. We have some that are maybe themed because the tag team tournament is taking place. So we see Roberts and Mulligan teaming together in one match, and maybe Anderson and Hansen in another, and maybe the Privates in another. And we get a theme for the show. And on this episode of the show, Roman, we don't really have any of that. It's just really a good old meat and potatoes, old territorial wrestling show that was made to move a whole bunch of things along. In the local market, it got matches that were coming up during the weekend. They had them hyped up, as well as really laying some groundwork for the future. It was just a very workman-like show. Would I be wrong in saying that it took that approach?
No, not at all. It had a little bit of everything, and it was a good blend. Like you said, some shows can be heavily laden on one thing or whatnot, but this had a little bit of everything. So I think this made it for a good episode.
I do want to mention this because I'm not sure if we noted it last week. There was a distinct lack of local interviews cut in, and that will be the same case today, although last week when it came to episode number 12 of the show, those were cut out. Roman, you saw Pork Chop Cash, and I'm not sure who else it was on the WWE Classics version that you had of the show, but those were actually clipped out of our versions, leaving us with just really everything that had taken place on that episode of the show and nothing else. On this episode of the show, on both versions, everything was basically cut out except for a very short piece of an Ann Arbor cut-in that was an interview with Mike Rotundo. I've noticed that's they do that more and more on the Classics episodes of leaving those old localized promos in. And what's kind of funny is I went back and listened to Pork Chop Cash, and granted, it's a Pork Chop Cash interview, so it really wasn't very good and didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's not like there was anything on it that would have made it too hot to be aired on the WWE Network version. I thought that was odd.
Yeah, I mean, we've alluded to it in the past. There's times where we don't know why some of these promos are in, and like you said, with the Pork Chop, why it was edited out, but wasn't a great interview, but it's just kind of weird. It's almost like it's random, you know. Sometimes they'll leave them in, sometimes they won't, and who knows what's going on with the people at the network when they decide to do these things.
Now, when it comes to this April 3rd edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, it was the Jack Briscoe show. No Roddy Piper to be found anywhere, no Austin Idol to be found anywhere. There was only Anderson and Stan Hansen, and that would bubble up a little bit later on, but the big heel of the day was Sergeant Slaughter, who was swaggering about getting ready for his world championship match that he had coming up on April 4th in Charlotte against Ric Flair. And you're going to hear him talk here in the opening with Bob Caudle and Sandy Scott, who also mentions the World Tag Team Championship Tournament, which has at times in the last few weeks taken a backseat to some other things taking place in the area.
Thinking of great things and a lot of excitement. Here's our NWA representative, Sandy Scott, right here. And Sandy, you got some good information and some great information for all our fans about our tag team tournament.
Yes, from the east and the west, we have some winners here, and I'd like to tell them, like I said last week, to name some names. Buddy Rose and Rick Oliver from Oregon, Washington area. Jim Nelson and Don Canuto.
Right.
Adonis and Ventura, that's up in the New York area. We got Graham and Steve Kearns down in Florida. Wahoo McDaniels and Don Morocco. That's a powerful team right there. Killer Khan and Angelo Mosca.
That's a big one.
It sure is. Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel out of Minnesota. Ole Anderson and, of course, Hansen. Yeah. And a Japanese team, Tim Rue and Saruta.
I tell you, that's a great, great lineup. And by the way, we're going to be getting down in that tournament's going to be rapidly drawing to a close in the next few weeks, Andy.
Oh, it's going to get hot and heavy and exciting, and the fans out there are going to really see some of the
and
top
names.
And
you'll have some more information on that in the
coming next week.
In the recent weeks, yeah. Right here. Sergeant Slaughter, right here, U.S. Heavyweight Champion.
That's right. You know, you talk about tournaments, Sandy Scott. I, myself, and Private Nelson won a tournament, but that's no difference to me right now. What I want to talk about is the World Heavyweight Championship. You know, when I came into this area, I told you that I would win the U.S. Heavyweight Championship, and I did it. Then I told you that I would run Wahoo McDaniels out of town, and I did that. And then I said I would run Ricky Steamboat out of town, and I've done that. He was scared, of the guillotine. He was scared of the Cobra Clutch. And right now, I'm telling you right now that Ric Flair, your number's up. I'm going to run you out of town. I'm going to take your title. And it's just a few weeks away.
All right, fans, there it is from Sergeant Slaughter himself. And as we say, we got great, great stars. One right here, Sandy, that I want to get in and have all of the fans meet. We're welcome and delight him. Delighted in having him back to there. I want to get Jack Briscoe out here, too,
well,
right now.
We're going to see both Jack and Jerry in action in a match coming up. And
Jake Roberts is going to be here.
You got a tremendous program. I see Jerry
and Taylor.
I see Jerry.
All right, here.
Out.
All right, Jack Briscoe right here, world champion Jack Briscoe. Jack, welcome. Delighted to have you back.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it being back. It's really nice to be back in this area. Of course, as you can see, there's a lot of trouble, a lot of competition in this area, mainly Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant Slaughter, he talks with a lot of confidence, and he acts with a lot of confidence, and he wrestles with the confidence. Well, it's easy to have the confidence knowing you got two henchmen or two stooges backing you up all the time. Well, I'll tell you what, Sergeant Slaughter, you can bring yourself and your stooges out here right now, and we can get this thing settled right now, right here, anytime you want to.
Today's going to be exciting, Jack.
There, here, the introduction of the show would end up being an exciting show, and I did mention that Jack Briscoe was going to be a focal point of the show, and you may be asking, Mike, you had Sergeant Slaughter come out there. You're telling me Jack Briscoe is going to be the focal point of the show? Yes, he would be, as he would remain on commentary as well as wrestling, and we'll get to him in a minute. But Roman, Sergeant Slaughter's got a match coming up. What would it be the next day if people were checking this out on Saturday? On Sunday in Charlotte, he would get a World Heavyweight Championship match against Ric Flair. We remember the situation where he and his privates ran in attacking Flair and Steamboat after their NWA World Heavyweight Championship match, a brutal attack which left Ric Flair laid out and being carried back to the locker room in Ricky Steamboat's arms. This sent the territory in to a big uproar. You had Blackjack Mulligan Jr. commenting on it. You had Ron Ritchie coming back into the area commenting on it. You had Mike George debuting in the area commenting on Sergeant Slaughter's actions, as well as Ricky Steamboat, who Sergeant Slaughter has claimed he has run from the area, and we have not seen Ricky Steamboat in a little bit, but a nice little promo there by Sergeant Slaughter laying out his actions and mentioning that, yes, he has run Ricky Steamboat away from the area, but I have a feeling that that won't be lasting too long. Any thoughts on the opening of the show there with Slaughter and with Jack Briscoe, who... To me, anytime I grew up in the 80s, so Jack Briscoe and Harley Race were a little bit from a different era, even though they were both still active, but they were two guys that, because they were former NWA World Champions, anytime they appeared on my screen, even if I didn't necessarily always understand or comprehend their style and how they would actually do business, when I was used to maybe a little bit more flash and things like that, I always had to stand up and take attention because how they were presented, which was with high honor and with everything that they said, no matter how quiet, no matter how deliberate, it was something that you had to pay attention to.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that was back in the era when the world champion was actually the world champion, where they traveled all over the world and traveled to the different territories. So I'm the same way. You hear a name like Briscoe, Ray, Dory Funk, the names just commanded respect because of what they stood for. Being the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, that meant something.
Yeah, I mean, that was a time where you can name all of the champions, you know. Remember when Hulk Hogan first won the WWF title, they had the nameplates on there, and there were only a couple of them because there were only a couple of champions. You can still remember them to this day, how it goes if you grew up in that era, that it went from Buddy Rogers to Bruno to Ivan Koloff to Pedro to Stan Stasiak, back to Bruno to Superstar Graham to Bob Backlund. If you want to try to get creative and throw Greg Valentine or Antonio Inoki in that mix, I guess you could do that too. But then it was Iron Sheik and then Hogan. In the NWA, it was kind of the same way. I mean, obviously, they would talk about tracing the NWA world title lineage back to Abraham Lincoln in being the Illinois state champion in the 1860s or whatever the hell that they would say, 1840s, whatever they would say it was. But, you know, for modern wrestling fans or from fans of the era we're talking about, it was the Funks, both of the Funks. It was Gene Kiniski, Whipper Watson, Lou Thesz. I mean, you knew the names going back at least to the 30s. And again, there weren't that many of them, and you could name them, and they all were tangible. The world title meant something. And Jack Briscoe being out on commentary really gave an air of respectability to the proceedings and to the people that he was commenting on, which we will get to here very, very soon. And I will let everyone know the referee for the day, Sonny Fargo, which will be very obvious when you listen to some of the match clips we have and you hear the very distinct voice of Sonny Fargo barking out orders to the wrestlers in the ring. He is wearing his red referee's outfit today. Yes, the matching top and bottom with the bell bottoms. Roman, you've been out there in Vegas for a long time. Do you ever see anybody still walking around with any sort of like velour version of what Sonny Fargo had on, possibly with the same look on his face and mustache?
It's been a while, but in Vegas, you get the melting pot. And back when people actually came here before the whole coronavirus thing happened, but you would see all kind of crazy fashion statements, to say the least.
And for this first match, Terry Taylor has joined Bob Caudle on commentary, and Terry Taylor is very early in his career. He is very reserved. He is very quiet. This is to get Terry Taylor some work talking on the microphone, and he does his darndest here for the first match, which is the Briscoes against Mike Miller and Steve Seibert. Match goes about 4 minutes and 58 seconds, ends with Jack Briscoe using a double underhook suplex and a figure four on Miller. I will play a little bit of audio from this. I'll play the finish, but before we play that, Roman, I had to laugh. I can't help it. It's gone from ridiculous to sublime for me. The who contributed the most to Jim Crockett Promotions and professional wrestling in 1981 contest, a contest that we were promised a winner on 2 or 3 weeks ago. Still, we have not gotten an update on it, but we did get Bob Caudle actually bringing it up and talking to Terry Taylor about it, about the fact that, hey, you keep getting votes even though you can't win.
Terry Briscoe's shoulders down to the mat. Terry, speaking of Terry Taylor right here, who last year in 1981, and even though you weren't here for most of the year, you received a tremendous amount of votes as a young man who contributed the most to wrestling for 1981. And I know that's got to mean a great deal to you, because you have picked up a tremendous amount of fan support in the time that you've been in wrestling.
The fans here have been very good to me since I've been here, and I want to tell them each and all right now, thank you very much for their continued support. I'll tell you, this competition here is getting tougher and tougher all the time.
You can see a making of a good team here, where the Briscoes keep their man over on their side of the ring.
You hear Sandy Scott very quickly get away from the entire contest, and Roman, You don't have to, but you got anything you want to say about who contributed the most to professional wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions in 1981?
No, just beating a dead horse. They start it and they don't finish it, and I don't know. I'm glad they didn't spend a whole bunch of time on it, but I guess for the fans and us, it would have been nice to finally put a bow on it and be done with it.
Hey, you never know. It could still happen, but let's go ahead and put a bow on this match and give you what the finish sounded like with Jack Briscoe getting the victory.
I'll tell you, they've had Miller in here a long time. I think they're getting ready to go for the kill here.
That's right. Miller needs to get over to make a tag if possible. Briscoe had made a tag. Did Miller? Oh, he got Miller before. Miller was trying to get over for the tag.
See, that's beautiful wrestling. They're stopping from making the tag. They've had him in trouble all night. Double under suplex, that'll take the wind out of him. And there he goes into the figure four.
Yes, he's going to go and lock that figure four.
He gets it, that's all. I believe that's it.
No way. If Miller can't get some help and can't get the rope, then Jerry Briscoe quickly gets in and cuts him off, so there's no way that he's going to get any help. And out of that figure four, it's just all over when he gets that locked in. You aren't going to get out of it.
So there you hear the end of that match there. Immediately afterwards, the boys from Oklahoma jumped out of the ring, went and joined Bob over at the commentary table, talk a little bit about the tag team tournament, as well as Sergeant Slaughter.
Jerry Briscoe right here. Hey, Jerry, it was great to see you guys up here in action, and I tell you, you look mighty good.
Well, thank you. You know, we've been training with one thought in mind throughout the last 6 months. As soon as we received word about the tag team, World Tag Team Championships, my brother and I knew you know, that there was one goal that we had left to obtain, and that was the tag team championships. Of course, Jack was world heavyweight champion. I was fortunate enough to be the junior heavyweight champion of the world. And combined, we feel that we are the number one team, regardless of what Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, Adonis, or any of these Venturas or anybody else of these local or regional winners. We're ready to take on any of them anytime.
Yeah, I tell you, you got a lot of support. A lot of people feel the same way about that. And Jack, I know this tournament, this is really what it's all about for you guys.
This is the ultimate for us. As Jerry mentioned, we were both individual world champions, and our only remaining goal is to be world tag team champions. Of course, we realize a lot of teams have won matches, you know, and won tournaments all over the world, and when it comes down to the final few, it's going to get tougher as the days goes by. But I want to make one statement. Make it a warning to Sergeant Slaughter. I'm not only a good tag team partner with my brother, but I was also world champion as a single. So, Sergeant Slaughter, don't you make any mistakes.
All right, fans, that's it right here ringside from the Briscoes.
There you hear the Briscoe brothers, and at this point, Jerry Briscoe would head back to the locker room. Former world heavyweight champion Jack Briscoe would stay on the microphone with Bob Cottle and with Sandy Scott playing in the background. They'd stay out there for Tim Horner against Tony Russo. And this was, as I mentioned earlier on, this is kind of a meat and potatoes type of show to give some guys some time, whether it be Terry Taylor on the microphone or Tim Horner in the ring against an old veteran in Tony Russo. And, you know, if I said, hey, Roman, Tim Horner and Tony Russo went about 6.5 minutes, if I would have mentioned that before the show, I'm not sure how you would have taken it. But after seeing it, I thought it was pretty darn good.
This was a really good contest that showcase the moves of Tim Horner. And, you know, in the past, whenever I've seen Russo in the WWF as an enhancement wrestler, he really didn't get a bunch of offense in. And in this contest, he was able to get in some offense, but not a sustained long period of offense, because every time he did something, Horner had a counter for it. And this was a really solid contest. I was very pleasantly surprised by the way this contest went down.
Yeah, you know, I think of Tony Russo more as a enhancement guy than I do a carpenter. And I know somebody in the wrestling business is going to beat me to death about using those terms in the way I am. But listen, this is how me, at least in my mind, that I am, and I judge this here. It wasn't Tony Zane going out there to get eliminated by the Road Warriors. It wasn't Tony Russo going out there to get wiped out by a really angry Ricky Steamboat who's on the rampage and looking to get his hands on Roddy Piper or something like that. It was Tony Russo trading moves with really young Tim Horner from over the mountains in Tennessee, who they're not real sure about. And he's got some experience. He's gotten beat up in Georgia. He's gotten beat up over for Blackjack Mulligan's promotion over in Knoxville. Now he's over here getting beat up. But we might have something with this kid. And there's Tony Russo working with him. And it was for 6.5 minutes. It was a good back-and-forth affair. Russo really maintaining the advantage throughout. So it was a little bit of a surprise when Horner got the victory. He got a good pop from the crowd. And it allowed Jack Briscoe to also not only talk about Sergeant Slaughter in the tag team tournament still, but also put over Tim Horner. And that little, you know, air of credibility that Briscoe would have talking about a young guy like Horner and noting some of the things that he was doing, you know, again, it just helped to lay groundwork for how fans would perceive Tim Horner as the weeks would go on. And that would be very, very important. Those seeds, those small things that they would plant, you know, it was a long-term goal when it came to these promotions. It was a long-term thing when it came to a lot of this stuff. So the little bit you plant early is going to pay off a lot later on. And it was good. And Tim Horner did some nice stuff. And there was... I did like the fact that some of the kids in the crowd did try to get the "Let's go horny, let's go" chant going, but the elders probably kind of like put that one to bed, so we didn't get too much horny love. But what we did get is a couple of really good moves, including at one point there was a test of strength where the guys had their fingers locked, and Horner did the deal where he kicked up his foot and knocked Russo's hands away, and he jumped up into a head scissors. Russo pushed him off, and as he did, Horner went back to his feet, jumped up, hit a great-looking dropkick. I thought that was a really cool little spot that you don't really see anymore, but, you know, stood out on the show and got a nice pop from the crowd.
Yeah, it was nice because Horner did that move twice. He did it early in the contest successfully. He went from a handstand into a head scissors, and then when he tried it later, Russo shoved him off, and then when Horner hit that standing drop kick, it just went smooth. It was very fluid, and Russo really did a good job in this contest because you look at him, he doesn't look like he could go. You know, he's a little overweight, doesn't have the best body, but he was with Horner move for move, and he was a big part of the reason that this was a good contest because, after all, it takes two to tango.
He's a short all. He's a fire plug. He's just shaped like a barrel out there, you know, big Italian, you know, curly-haired barrel out there, but really did a good job. And the end came when actually Russo, of all people, went for a sunset flip that Tim Horner rolled through as he did. He jumped back over, ended up getting the cradle and the pin. Like I mentioned, it went about 6.5 minutes. From there, we went immediately into our next match, which was Jake the Snake Roberts against Big Bill White. This match went for about 7.5 minutes, and some of you may be a little bit surprised with the length of the match, considering that Jake has been in the mix with Sergeant Slaughter for the U.S. title over the last couple of weeks. But the rub with this one was just very simply these two guys beat the hell out of each other, and it was a good physical performance that allowed Jake Roberts to get in some believable time against a big, tough opponent. And it also allowed Jack Briscoe on commentary kind of lay out some of the things that he's had going on. And as some of you may remember from the last episode when Jack Briscoe was in the ring, Roddy Piper had made his way to the commentary table to take a little bit of a look. As we know, in the future, they would be involved in a pretty vicious feud that was very high profile and very, very entertaining when it came to the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. And while today Jack Briscoe has been mostly sidetracked by Sergeant Slaughter, during this match, Bob brings up the name Roddy Piper to Jack Briscoe, who does give his thoughts on the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion.
Talking about, we had talked about Sergeant Slaughter. We had talked about Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. Jack, I tell you, there's got to be another individual around that sort of can stir you up a little bit, and that's this Roddy Piper.
Yes,
nobody
sir.
Brags and goes on, I think, as much as Roddy Piper does.
Yes, that's true. You know, he can really get to you. I've always prided myself on being able to keep my cool and not let things upset me because, as I stated earlier, you get mad or upset, and that's when you get in trouble. And that's Piper's, that's his main thing. He's such a talker, he can get you upset by just talking to you. And this man has talked himself into more situations, and I'm afraid he's going to be able to handle it.
We'll put that on the back burner for now. There are other things on Jack Briscoe's plate, not the least of which was a match coming up that night, April 3rd in Greensboro, a match that would also take place on the 5th in Greenville, South Carolina. That match would be the Andersons and Stan Hansen against Ric Flair and the Briscoes. And Jack gives a little bit of the genesis on how that occurred.
Yeah, I got an interesting, there goes Jake. I got a very interesting call the other day from current World's Heavyweight Champion, Ric Flair, who is doing a magnificent job as World's Champion. And I was very flattered that he asked my brother Jerry and I to be his partner in a six-man tag team match against Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Gene Anderson. And I was very flattered. Jerry and I were tickled to death about it. And especially facing Gene and Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen, three of the toughest men in the world.
What a match that's going to be, six men.
And for the world champion to call me and ask us to join it was a real, I was really honored.
There you hear Jack Briscoe talking about getting the call from the World Heavyweight Champion, champion to champion call, Ric Flair, asking for the Briscoes' help against the Anderson brothers and Stan Hansen, and with the Briscoes being in the area anyway, looking for those NWA World Tag Team Championship tournament victories. They were glad to help out the Nature Boy, and that would be a match, as I mentioned, that would take place that night in Greensboro, also again a couple nights later in Greenville, South Carolina. Not to take away anything from the match, as I mentioned, went about 7.5 minutes. 7:40 is what I had it timed out to be. Jake the Snake Roberts getting the victory with his version of the $1 million knee lift. Big Bill White put up a hell of a fight here, Roman. These two guys slamming each other about. What'd you think about the match and the length of it here with Roberts going 7:40? It seemed like it was kind of done, one, obviously, to give Robert some work, but mostly to get some things across for Jack Briscoe.
Yeah, I thought it was a real good competitive contest. And Jake was a little more methodical than what I remember usually seeing him. He worked a wrist lock, chin lock, hammer lock. He did an arm bar. Maybe that was part to kind of stretch the match out a little longer, like you said, to let Briscoe get some points in on commentary. But yeah, good competitive match. And Jake took it home with the knee lift.
Now, this next set of interviews we got coming up here, including with Jake Roberts, certainly feel like that they were the spots that were done as local promos would have been airing in most markets. Bob talks to both Jake and Blackjack Mulligan Jr., and you're going to get a weird cut at the end because there is a weird cut at the end. Blackjack Mulligan Jr., was basically cut off, and Bob introduces Rick Benfield. So it didn't happen from the producer's end. It was happened in post-production with the WWE Network. So I'm not sure exactly what happened with the tape here, but if you hear the odd ending, it wasn't my terrible editing skills. Don't be calling for Lou Kippelman to come in here and executive produce this thing. It was just whatever took place with the network. But without any further ado, Jake the Snake Roberts and Blackjack Mulligan Jr.
Jake, good win for you against a tough opponent.
I appreciate it, Bob. You know, things are getting hot and heavy around here. And the main thing I want to talk about is that tag team tournament. I've yet to qualify for the final round, but I still keep looking for that shot. And the number one thing etched in my mind every morning when I get up, I think about you all day long. Slaughter, it's going to come a time when you and I are going to step into that squared circle, and we're going to get it down, and we're going to get it over with. Because you see, the way I look at it, there can only be one man. And I don't think you're much of a man, and I'm out to prove that. Because a man does not have to have somebody else detain or draw so you can attack from behind. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. If it means going through the recruits, fine and dandy, because there's plenty of people around here that can do that. And if it takes more people, by gosh, we're going to get them. And fans will love you, and we're going to see you in the arenas
all
around
right,
the area.
Blackjack Mulligan Jr., Blackjack.
I'll tell you what, sir, yes. I'll tell you what, there is one thing I want to say. I do want to give Sergeant Slaughter just a little bit of credit where credit is due, and that's what he's done with those two privates. He's managed to get them into that tag team tournament, and I don't know how, but I tell you what, if I get a hold of either one of them, or Slaughter, as the matter goes, they won't be in that tournament very long. That's just how serious I am.
All right, fans, and now let's go to the ring.
You hear kind of the odd edit there of Blackjack Mulligan Jr. talking about getting his hands on Sergeant Slaughter's big old privates. He's been trying to tuck them away, been trying to hide them, but Blackjack Mullet Jr. is going to seek those out, and he really can't wait to get a hold of those privates, Roman. Any thoughts on Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jake Roberts' interview there?
No, nothing. I think, nothing really to add to him.
I'm sorry.
You left me at a loss for words, Mike.
I can't help it. I'm just a large child here. You know, folks. You know, you got to get older, but you can stay immature forever. So Terry Taylor and Rick Benfield were up next. Jack Briscoe remained on commentary earlier on when Terry Taylor was out there talking, commentating over the Briscoes match. He did mention how much the Briscoes have helped him out. Terry being billed from Vero Beach, Florida. Here in this match, Jack Briscoe, as Terry's out there against Rick Benfield, returns the favor. And here's a little bit of audio from that match with Jack talking about Terry.
I had to go for a half Nelson, but Benfield blocked him on it.
We talked to him earlier, Jack, and he said that you and Jerry were responsible for him being in professional wrestling. So I'm sure you two guys have got to have a lot of pride in this.
Well, we're very honored about it because we realize the future that Terry Taylor has in professional wrestling. Because Terry is from Florida, and I watched Jerry and I quite a bit down in Florida. And Jerry and I worked out with him quite a bit down in Florida. And he's just a very promising young athlete who Jerry and I expect to go a long, long way in professional wrestling.
Not too bad of an eye for talent there. Although it was hard not to look at Terry Taylor and not think that he was going to be a future star in wrestling. The look, the body, the whole nine yards. And he didn't make it where a lot of people thought he'd make it, but certainly a name for good and for bad that people certainly remember that grew up in that era. Terry Taylor gets the win over Rick Benfield with that abdominal stretch roll-up, as I mentioned. Not really a very eventful match. I do want to mention something, too, just because, for the record here, we didn't mention it at the beginning of the show because Sergeant Slaughter and Jack Briscoe were out there doing interviews, but you may have heard Sandy Scott run down all of these teams that had been winning local regional tournaments, and we have mentioned every single solitary tournament that has taken place so far for these NWA World Tag Team Championship belts, and things were falling apart for the NWA World Tag Team Tournament at this time. There was supposed to be one held in Knoxville, one held in Toronto, one held here, one held there, and it didn't start to work, and Ole Anderson and the powers that be in Crockett Promotions, things would start going south there as time goes on here. We still have a little bit to go before we get to that, but by the time spring is over, we're going to have all sorts of issues when it comes to this whole angle over the NWA World Tag Team Championships. But I just wanted to note that for the record. I also want to note for the record that if you're tired right now, if you have taken a fistful of Ambien, maybe THC is legal in your state and you've taken a bunch of capsules and are eating a brownie right now, you may want to fast forward over the next 2 minutes or so. That is because former Syracuse alumnus Mike Rotundo, who is very, very early in his career, is out there to cut an interview with Big Bill Ward. And as I've mentioned, there have not been too many of these localized cut-in promos, and why this one is here, I have no idea. They have lopped it off a longer cut-in that Bill Ward was doing for the people in Ann Arbor, Michigan, who were checking out all of the stars of the NWA, but the only interview that has apparently survived from this weekend shows is this interview with Mike Rotundo, which, as I mentioned, be careful if you're operating heavy machinery.
Fans, let me introduce to you one of the exciting newcomers to NWA Wrestling, a man who has a great amateur background, Mike Rotundo. Mike, welcome.
Hello. I'd like to say hello to all the people in Ann Arbor and tell them a little bit about me, because right now they don't know me. But when I leave Ann Arbor, hopefully they'll know me and respect me as a wrestler and as a man. First of all, I'd like to say that I played football and wrestled at Syracuse University in New York, and I had a good career there, and I'm happy with it, but that's over. Now I've taken the step into the pro ranks, and anytime you take that step, you have to be ready physically, mentally, and you really have to be ready to go, because this is where the men are now. And I'm coming to Ann Arbor, and I'm hoping to get the chance to wrestle the best, because I want to be the best. And I'm willing to spend the time in the gym and in the ring working out with my partners. And just, I have to really work hard so I can earn the right to wrestle the best. And I'm just going to do it.
Well, you know, Mike, this wrestling, this professional wrestling is rugged, it's tough, but you seem like you have prepared yourself and are ready for it.
Yeah, I've spent years of my life, 12 years as an amateur, and now I'm just trying to make the transition. And at first it was tough, but I'm starting to come around now. And I'm taking care of my body the best I've ever done before, you know, and I'm just excited about it.
Well, you know, Mike, I think the NWA has some of the greatest wrestlers in the world, big names and big guys.
Oh, yes, there are some big names here. It's, if not the best, it's one of the best conferences in the world, bar none. So you have to be ready mentally, and you have to prepare yourself for every match. And if you're not prepared, you could get seriously hurt. And I understand that, so that's why I'm in the gym. I'm training, I'm running, I'm doing everything I can to get myself ready for this competition.
Mike Rotundo, I think you're ready. You're a handsome young man. I think you're going to become one of the most popular NWA wrestlers.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, Roman.
Yep, and I had flashbacks. Watching this interview reminded me of the first time I hosted the wrestling show for the Independent League that I was an announcer for here in Vegas. And you could see it in Rotundo, and I was the same way, where you're not sure whether you should look in the camera, look to the side where the guy's giving you the cue on how much time is left. Mike was looking all over the place, and I just had flashbacks because that's how I was. And on the first time I did it, and that might very well have been his first TV appearance. According to my records, He had only been wrestling for about 4 months, and they said it was his debut in the area. So if it wasn't his first appearance on TV, it was one of his first, and you could tell the kind of nervousness, the quiet tone in his voice, and like you said, we all got to start somewhere.
It's another piece of that Florida connection, too. You know, the Humperdinck, Dory Funk, lots of guys that will, as we'll be talking about in the next upcoming months and years here, the heavy tie-in that Jim Crockett had down there with Eddie Graham and the NWA, a very galvanized loop that they would put up there in Mike Rotundo. Yeah, hey, like I said, Mike Rotundo, if he got his hands on you, could kill you in about 9 seconds. He would probably take even less time than that. Just a beast of a wrestler. He really, really was, and that's something that gets kind of forgotten about because of all the characters that he's played and because of his interview skills, which, you know, really never advanced past this too terribly much. I mean, there were times where he was good when he was with the Varsity Club. It was like a completely different guy. I mean, it was absolutely nuts. You could see with the Varsity Club how this was the guy that gave birth to Bray Wyatt, you know, or at least helped contribute the birth of Bray Wyatt. But at other points in his career, it just, you know, he was not known for being on the mic. And, you know, he starts off here, and Mike Rotundo's career in Mid-Atlantic would be a very fruitful one, and it contributed a lot to the wrestling business and had a sneaky, successful career. One of those guys that, as you go through the 80s and 90s, man, he lasted for a long time and really was an integral point and somebody that people tend to take for granted and forget about, but we got to poke fun at him here for this interview that he did with Big Bill Ward. His eyes darting everywhere, and like Roman mentioned, it was pure nervousness. It wasn't in that Roddy Piper, we're getting coked up sort of way. It was just, this guy had no idea what was going on. There'll be interviews with Mike Rotundo coming up in the next couple of weeks where he's just sweating like a whore in church out there, just completely, I don't want to say overwhelmed, but, you know, he never had the microphone shoved in his face too much at Syracuse, and you could tell that. He was out there to wrestle, and that's what he did the best. And two other guys that were known for their wrestling were Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen, and they were up next against Ron Ritchie and Tony Anthony. Ron Ritchie has had some good days. Ron Ritchie has had some bad days. But for the first 3 minutes and 23 seconds of this match, boy, it sucked to be Ron Ritchie. Ron Ritchie got his ass kicked by Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen, tagging in and out in that Anderson sort of way to take turns, just putting a thumping on Ritchie. He then tagged in Tony Anthony, and oh my. We talked about the dropkick that Don Carnoodle landed right on Anthony's face a couple of weeks ago. That was nothing compared to the lariat you're going to be hearing coming up here. Roman, I only cut really one piece of this match, which was basically the end here. But any thoughts on this thing and about the brutality that was the hook and the lariat?
Well, Hansen and Ole just absolutely had their way in this contest. And right before the lariat, Hansen let out a yell. And just, and when he hit the dirty white boy, Tony Anthony, with that lariat, oh my gosh, I rewound that a couple times, just the sound and the force, and I felt bad for him. I really felt bad for him because Stan damn near knocked his head off into the third row.
What I'm going to play for you is just basically Ron Ritchie trying to get the hot tag here, and before this, Jack Briscoe, who was still out there on commentary, had put over the Andersons really strong as a team, put over their Gene and Ole's run, how they were the true world tag team champions, how that really meant something, and really did a great job about putting them over. And then also mentioned again about Ric Flair giving him a call and what an honor that was. We'll go ahead and play a little medley of the end right here with Ritchie not only getting the tag, but also Tony Anthony getting tagged.
He's in trouble right now. Bob, he has to get out and then tag his partner, Tony Anthony, and get him in that ring.
Let's see if he makes the tag. Very wise move on his part to turn around and make that tag.
You see what you mean? You can hit that Hansen as hard as you want. I just don't believe you can hurt
him. He didn't back up, Jack.
No.
He stood his ground.
That Tony hit him three times and he had it, and he just didn't blink an eye.
Vicious elbow smash.
He dropped that 325-pound stuff at Chesbrough.
And what's that double team?
They're definitely the team to win for that world championship. They never released their opponent because the other man throwing a blow.
I haven't seen them make one mistake as yet. They're tagging in good. They're keeping the man over in that corner.
Oh, what a clothesline from Hanson.
It's all over, I guarantee you.
Jack, you just can't get up from a move like that.
You can't get up after a lariat like that. You just can't get up.
There it is. Yes, sir, from Stan Hanson. Watch right here. Watch him come in and off of the ropes. And when he gets into that lariat, boy, he goes down like a sack right here. It's all over at this point. Stan Hanson, Ole Anderson, the winners.
How you like that, Briscoe? Stan Hanson yells that out at the end here. After this, the boys jump out of the ring and approach Jack at the desk. Roman, before we get to that, any thoughts there? Once again, you heard the unbelievable slapping of Stan Hansen's arm just barreling off the neck, chest, and head of Tony Anthony. He just hit everything, and Tony Anthony hit the mat damn hard. Any thoughts there, hearing it one more time?
You almost wish they would have gave Tony Anthony a couple extra bucks for suffering the beating he took. And that lariat, I promise you, when you watch it, you'll probably end up rewinding it and watching it again because it is something to be seen.
At that point, as I mentioned, they jumped out, and Jack Briscoe at the desk. Ole Anderson goes over to him with Stan Hansen and Gene behind him and gives Jack a warning here, and that leads into a closing set of interviews, not only with Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen, but also Sergeant Slaughter out there one more time to seal the deal when it comes to Ric Flair, as well as Ivan Koloff, the NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Champion, who is really letting Jimmy Valiant get to him.
Oh, I listen to you. I listen to you all day long, Briscoe. You come down here, big star, world's heavyweight champion. You look at us, and you tell me if you got a chance. A lot of people are putting a lot of bets on you, a lot of money on you, thinking you might beat somebody. You're talking about what a privilege it is for you to wrestle with Flair. You and that brother of yours, where is that mealy mouth? Well, he's not here. You're by yourself, Jack, and you're just lucky. This time you're going to get by. Don't give me that steely-eyed look. You're lucky. Anybody in the world knows that three guys can wipe out one, and you're just one. And all I'm saying to you right now is I'm giving you a warning.
Just try it right now, and I guarantee you I have friends back there that will be here in a second, and you might buy it off more than you can handle, Anderson.
Hey, Briscoe.
Roman, let me stop that right there. I was sitting there watching Ole Anderson cut that promo on Jack Briscoe, stand there and get right in his face, and I thought one thing that never really gets brought up is Ole Anderson, World Heavyweight Championship contender. Because of the NWA World Tag Team Championship situation, because of his situation as a booker in Georgia and the Carolinas, and his reluctance to want to travel and make that type of commitment and go all over the place. The World Heavyweight Championship and Ole Anderson really are never put in the same sentence, but I was thinking, watching that and listening back to that, man, Ole Anderson really was, if you would have, at any point, Ole Anderson could have been the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and it would have been as believable as Harley Race, Gene Kaniski, Lou Fez, or anybody else.
It would have been fun to see what would have happened had Ole been given a run with the title. He definitely could talk. You know, they used to say back then that you got to be able to talk him into the building. And Ole was obviously a great talker, could cut a great promo. But like you said, he had a lot of duties behind the scenes, booking in Georgia, handling Mid-Atlantic. He had a lot of other commitments, but it would have been fun to see him and Jack Briscoe have a little bit of run. Even if Ole didn't win the belt, just to have him watch them play out and have a feud, that would have been good entertainment right there.
Might have to do that for the next show, do a little bit of research and take a look at all the times that Ole Anderson got a shot at the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and when his last one ended up being. Get back to The Rock as well as the Sergeant and Ivan Koloff.
Let him talk about things. Let him say whatever he wants to say. I'm telling you right now, ain't nobody gonna beat us. Nobody's going to beat Henderson. Nobody's going to beat Hanson. We throw Gene in there. I don't care if it's Flair, the Briscoes, or anybody else. We'll run them all off. We're the best team there is, and we're going to stay that way.
All right, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Sergeant Slaughter right here.
That's right. You know, I heard Jack Briscoe out here, Jerry Briscoe, Jake the Snake Roberts, all talking about Slaughter and bit off more than he can chew. And every week, I prove that I can bite off when I chew. I do whatever I want to do in that ring. I tell you I'm going to hurt somebody, and I do it. I'm telling you right now, Ric Flair, I have beaten you. I beat you right in the middle of the ring, and right here, Monday's paper. What does that say right there?
Slaughter pins Flair.
That's right. Slaughter pins Flair, and I'm going to do it again. Flair, I've beaten you once, and I'm going to do it again.
Ivan Koloff right here. Ivan, I heard the man, Jimmy Valiant, talking
about
you.
I heard him too. I can't get him out of my head. You know what it's like to wake up with nightmares night after night. This man, Boogeyman, is always in my mind. Why? Because he comes out and interferes with my match all the time, and he's out after my TV belt. Well, I'm going to get him out of my head with these motorcycles running round and round me. I'm getting sick of this man. I'm going to get rid of you, Boogie Woogie Man. There's not room enough for you and myself in this area. I know what you're after, my TV belt. But I'll be dead before I see you take it from me.
Fans, we'll see you next week.
Yikes. You think the Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant is in the Russian bear Ivan Koloff's head there a little bit, Roman? He will be dead before Jimmy Valiant pries that title out of his cold hands. The Russian bear Ivan Koloff, who has had to deal with Jimmy Valiant from Jump Street as far as Jimmy Valiant getting back, causing a bunch of havoc. He attacked Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson one day. It ended up leading to him attacking Ivan Koloff, which drove Koloff nuts. He's not been able to get the advantage on Jimmy Valiant ever since, and it is just seemingly driving him mad.
Well, Ivan had to be determined to hang on to the TV title. I mean, he was going to take all the money and send it back to the Kremlin.
Exactly. Exactly. He needed to do that, and there were going to be very dire consequences for Ivan Koloff if he did not succeed for the Kremlin. We got a lot of results to get to from around the area as well. And as always, the tapings took place on Wednesday the 31st, so we will begin on Thursday, April 1st. April Fool's Day, Norfolk at the Scope. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Lord Alfred Hayes, and Gene Anderson defeated Ray Stevens. In Lynchburg on the same night, Jake the Snake Roberts defeated Sergeant Slaughter, as Jay Youngblood and Porkchop Cash defeated Private Nelson and Private Canoodle. In Charleston, South Carolina on April 2nd, Sergeant Slaughter went to a double disqualification with Jake Roberts. On the 2nd in Knoxville, Johnny Weaver defeated Kevin Sullivan. Ivan Koloff defeated Jimmy Valiant by disqualification. Bob Armstrong defeated Buzz Sawyer, and Jay Youngblood defeated the Ninja by DQ. The next morning at Knoxville, the TV tapings were held for WBIR Studios for NWA Southern Pro Wrestling. On April 3rd in Hampton, Johnny Weaver defeated Lord Alfred Hayes in a lumberjack match, as Jake Roberts and Paul Jones defeated Sergeant Slaughter and Private Nelson. April 3rd in Greensboro, North Carolina, on the card that was talked about for most of today's show, that saw Jimmy Valiant defeat Ivan Koloff and Roddy Piper defeat Bob Armstrong. But most importantly, Gene Anderson, Ole Anderson, and Stan Hansen defeated the Briscoes and Ric Flair, which marks the second time Ric Flair is on the losing end of a big six-man tag team championship match. Earlier on in the promo with Sergeant Slaughter, you heard him bring up the result that was in that Monday's paper. That is because that Sunday in Charlotte, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, and Jake the Snake Roberts were on the losing end to Sergeant Slaughter, Ole Anderson, and Stan Hansen, which saw Sergeant Slaughter get the victory over Ric Flair, which heated up a match that was coming up on April 4th. So Ric Flair, again, a big loss in a six-man match in Greensboro. And on that next night in Charlotte, North Carolina, world champion Ric Flair defeated Sergeant Slaughter, but only did it by DQ, keeping their feud alive. Also on that show, Paul Jones defeated Gene Anderson by disqualification, and the Briscoes knocked off Carl Fergie and David Patterson. Also on the 4th in Asheville, North Carolina, at the Civic Center, Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Sergeant Slaughter defeated Ric Flair, Blackjack Mulligan Jr., and Ray Stevens in an afternoon show, as well as Jack Briscoe defeating Roddy Piper and Jerry Briscoe defeating Bill White. Also on April 4th, up at Maple Leaf Gardens, was a show in Toronto, Ontario, which we have a little bit of a preview for from the voice of Maple Leaf Wrestling, Billy Red Lyons.
On Monday, April the 5th at 8 p.m., Maple Leaf Wrestling returns to the Brantford Civic Center, featuring all the stars seen here on Maple Leaf Wrestling. And on Sunday, April the 4th at 7:30 p.m. in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens, Frank Tunney's come up with another super card. You'll see Tito Zinza going against Tony Rico. In tag action, Indian J. Youngblood and Tony Cannonball Parisi will take on Sergeant Slaughter's recruit. Then you'll see Austin Idol going up against Johnny Weaver. In a super heavy match, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. goes against the Oriental Assassin, Ninja. Then an NWA TV title match with a one-hour time limit this time. Ivan Koloff, the champion, risks his title against Handsome Jimmy from New York City. And finally, a Canadian heavyweight title match. Angelo King Kong Mosca, the champion, risks his title against the mystery protege of Big John Studd. Remember, that all takes place on Sunday, April the 4th, 7:30 p.m. in Toronto's Maple Leaf.
There you hear what Billy Red Lyons ran down about the card. You'll notice no WWF or AWA participation on this show. Usually we get a WWF world title match or something like that, some other sort of interpromotional tie-in that the Tunneys would usually put on the show, but this one pretty much purely a Jim Crockett promotions card, obviously with the split crews, people all over the place, and Big John Studd's protege. Let me tell you something, folks. I can tell you this for a fact. Tarzan Tyler. It was impossible for him to be a protege of Chuck O'Connor, a.k.a. Big John Studd, a.k.a. John Minton. So I'm not sure what would have went sideways there, but as I look back at the results of that day in the main event, Angelo King Kong Mosca retained that Canadian Heavyweight Championship with a win over the veteran Tarzan Tyler. So I'm not sure exactly, again, what happened there. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff by disqualification. You heard that be an hour title, an hour time limit. It only went 13 minutes and 51 seconds. Blackjack Mulligan Sr. defeated the Ninja, Private Canoodle, and Private Nelson. Went to a 20-minute draw with Tony Parisi and Jay Youngblood. The next night in Greenville, South Carolina, April 5th, finally Ric Flair is on the winning side in one of the six-man tag team matches as he and the Briscoes knocked off Stan Hansen, Gene Anderson, and Ole Anderson. Roddy Piper defeated Ray Stevens, and Porkchop Cash defeated Jeff Sword on that show. In Front Royal, Virginia, on April 5th, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated the Ninja. You heard about the TV tapings that were taking place in Brantford, Ontario on April 5th. You don't have any results from there. But the next night in Raleigh, North Carolina, Ric Flair and Paul Jones defeated Sergeant Slaughter and Private Nelson as Jake Roberts defeated the Ninja. And the same night in Columbia, South Carolina, Ray Stevens and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Roddy Piper and Gene Anderson by disqualification. Jack Briscoe defeated Carl Fergie, and Terry Taylor defeated Steve Seibert. Takes us back around to Wednesday, April 7th, Charlotte, North Carolina, the WPCQ studios. We are back there for the tapings of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and Worldwide Wrestling. And of course, I will not spoil that for anybody, but I will give the WWE Network preview for the show. And it goes like this. On this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Terry Taylor partners with Kelly Konitsky to take on Private Don Kernoodle and Private Jim Nelson in a tag team match main event. Plus, Jimmy Valiant is left blinded. Jack Briscoe takes to the ring to battle Bill White and much more action. Uh-oh, Roman, did you hear that? Jimmy Valiant blinded next week. That's not even the top story for WWE Network, though. It's more about Terry Taylor and the Privates and Jack Briscoe battling Big Bill White. Jimmy Valiant being blinded. It is easy for me to say, number one, but also I would think it would be a little bit of a bigger story. Are you concerned about the boogeyman?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how loud the music will be next week when he gets blinded with their overdub of the music they like to play.
Oh, my God. I hate the fact that you had to remind me of that. Oh, jeez. Oh, it's painful, folks. And And unfortunately, we're probably going to get a heavy dose of it. But there was the results from around the entire area. Roman, any thoughts on this show and anything you want to say before we put a bow on it?
Yeah, at the beginning, Sandy Scott mentioned all the teams that had won tournaments. And I don't know about you, I found it a little hard to believe that Buddy Rose and Rip Oliver would win a tournament. Man, he went down a laundry list of people to win the tournament. I was just about everybody, but Jake the Milkman Milliman and Kenny Sodbuster Jay won a tournament. You know, it was quite a laundry list of people. And something I noticed on this show that you can really tell was the absence of Roddy Piper on commentary. There's only one hot rod, but to go from the energy level of a Roddy Piper to a very shy, quiet Terry Taylor, where you had to have the volume all the way up, or a Jack Briscoe who had a monotone type speaking voice. To me, I really missed Piper on commentary this week.
Oh yeah, completely different vibe with Jack Briscoe. We talked about, you know, the air respectability he had. You had to listen to him, but yeah, it was always a little bit more fun with Roddy Piper out there being the antagonist and Bob Cottle poking him back. Jack Briscoe gets together with Roddy Piper. Hoo boy, that gets really, really good. But Roman, I want to thank you very much for coming along on this voyage with me. And I want to thank everybody else for coming along on this voyage with us. If you like this show, please, if you are subscribing to it via an iTunes or one of those other services that allows you to rate the shows, please rate us 5 stars. They find that stuff to be very, very important. We just find it to be really, really nice, and we would like that very much. And that gives us more confidence and more enthusiasm to do things like hashtag Everyday Arn and On This Day in JCPTV History, which you could find over on our Twitter and Facebook, our Facebook group, which Roman is finally a part of. I thought he was a part of it. He is definitely a part of it now. We put longer form videos over there. I'm going to try to come up and do some different things over in the Facebook group to try to make that a little bit more special. Twitter has got a limit of 2 minutes and 20 seconds on the video, so there's only so much we could do there, but we can put up some longer form stuff from back in the day. So if you're an old wrestling fan out there looking to get that feeling back and like what we do on this show, I think you'll really enjoy that stuff too. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. And we hope all of you out there stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe, and we shall talk to you again after a while. The Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. Uncle Bob, you know what to do.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.